This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
Hello and welcome to Duck Snort Baseball Podcast. I'm Greg Nix.
I'm Wayland McQueen.
And we are coming to you from the middle. Well, actually, it's about to start the Home Run Derby. It's the All-Star break. No more baseball for 5 days.
There's one game Thursday, I think.
Oh, there is?
Yeah, I think like the Rangers and A's or something are playing.
Yeah, that
Thursday.
Doesn't count.
That's not bad.
Who's going to watch that?
I would. They're both good. They might make the playoffs.
I probably will watch it, too. I'll probably be baseball starved by then. I'll be like, anything.
So here's my...
They're weird teams, but they are good.
Can I do an immediate tangent based on that? Before we talk about thanking people, you know how ESPN picks the Sunday night game?
Yeah.
Do you go through and pick the game that you would pick?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, is your strategy more, should it be two good teams? Like if the Twins and Rangers were playing and that might truly be the best matchup, would you pick that? But, or is it better to have like Phillies, Cardinals? You know what I mean? Two teams that are not bad, but way bigger markets and bigger names. Like
I think it's like it is the middle ground where, yes, if it was Phillies or Cardinals, I would probably take it over Twins and Rangers, as upset as Twins and Rangers fans might be at that designation.
Where they are.
But
on
if
the
it was
scope.
Like, you know, if it was like Phillies and Mets.
That's a good example.
I wouldn't be interested in that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would rather see Twins and Rangers. But I think they do at least a large majority of them before the season starts. So it's like I don't think they're like picking every single week.
No, they're definitely not. But I think they should be able to flex, because it is annoying when it is like Phillies, Mets, or, you know, something that's like, well, these teams aren't.
Right. Two disappointing teams.
Or like
or
even like Cardinals,
that.
Phillies. Yeah, they're really good. But then you're using, if they're surprise teams in first place.
Yeah.
Like, if it's an interleague game between the Braves and Twins, I feel like that's the best game.
Yeah.
Even though Phillies Cardinals probably gets more eyeballs.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I guess ESPN just probably wants eyeballs. They don't care about, you know, the most competitive game.
Of course not. But I am glad that also you go through and pick your Sunday night.
Yeah, for sure.
Every Sunday morning picking. Which should be the Sunday night game?
Let's text each other from now on.
Oh, yeah.
It's in bed on Sunday morning. Which game would you
pick?
Which
game? Ooh, I just woke up.
Thank you guys for joining us before we get into the rest of the show, which includes a live interview with Max Frankel, co-founder of OffTheBenchBaseball.com, in which we pick our biggest winners and losers of the first half. Be sure to stick around and listen for that. But before we get to it, I do want to thank Off the Bench and Boardwalk Audio for their support, like we always do. We always appreciate their support. So support both of those great orgs. That's short for organization the uninitiated. Visit www.offthebenchbaseball.com and www.boardwalkaudio.com to support them. And for the uninitiated, I should add, www stands for World Wide Web, and com is short for commercial.
Wow.
Or company.
It's commercial.
Commercial.
Because they're commercial websites.
Or commitment. It's a commitment if you go to
boardwalkaudio.com. Commitment. Yeah, you're committing,
you're committing
to that webpage.
Yeah, exactly, for the next few seconds. That was a really great talk with Max, and I'm excited for everybody to hear it. And it was a good sort of just little overview of the first half and what we thought was interesting and fun and not fun. Before we get to that, instead of talking about what just happened in the first half, we're going to look ahead and at what's going to happen, because the trade deadline's only about 3 weeks away, and it is one trade deadline this year. There's going to be no August waiver trades. So it's a big deadline, bigger than past years. And somewhat surprisingly, there haven't really been any deals since the Yankees traded for Edwin Encarnacion a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we just wanted to go through and kind of p- pick some trades we'd like to happen, see some guys we'd like to see on other teams, just as our preview of the trade deadline.
Right.
Do you think it's going to be a slow deadline?
I think it might be. This is what the first thing I want to talk about, and we've talked about this before, because there are only three definite sellers in the National League.
Yeah, the National League is so tightly
bunched.
That's
not that the Pirates, who have before been in contention, I think it was last year, right? Or was it 2 years ago? The Pirates have definitely made trades when it seemed like they were in contention.
Last year they traded for Chris Archer.
Oh, so maybe it was like two. There was a year I remember the Pirates were like at 500, or like three games around there, and then they were like definitively sellers at the deadline. Mm-hmm. And people were like, what are you doing? So last year was the opposite, where they went for Archer. The Reds could still be sellers. I guess at this point the Mets could be. I doubt it, though, from everything I've heard about the GM.
The only thing that the Mets are selling is chairs that are being hurled during meetings.
Bobby Knight's going to be pissed at his corner in the market. Yeah.
Brody Van Wagenen will be autographing chairs at like sports conventions or something. that was a really terrible segue, by the way, into that chair throwing thing.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It had nothing to do with sales.
That's true. but it's going to, in the National League, so anyway, it's only going to be the Giants, Marlins, and is that it?
I said three, but now I'm wondering
who else it'll be.
Yeah, I mean, Giants and Marlins are the ones you would say definitively are out of it.
Yes.
You know, the Diamondbacks have been slowing down. You could sort of see them maybe moving pieces, yeah, like Robbie Ray, if he is healthy and effective, or even Greinke, really, because he's on such a huge contract.
I'm sure Greinke has some pretty specific places that he will and will not.
He does have like a strange no trade list, I think. I think probably the Mets will have to end up selling. They're too far back. To
three teams, and then again, that's just for the division, and then wild card, you're looking at the Rockies and Brewers and Cardinals,
right,
Cubs, that mix. So I think they're too far back. American League, I guess, is a little more interesting just because you got Orioles, Blue Jays, the three teams.
Tigers, Royals.
White Sox will be interesting.
Yeah, White Sox are definitely on the borderline. It's kind of hard to predict what they're going to do.
It's hard to predict what the Angels will do because they're in it, but it might make sense for them to
Angels trade. Have had a fucking run of luck lately. Yeah. I mean, even setting aside like the Tyler Skaggs tragedy, like Tommy La Stella getting hurt and now Jonathan Lucroy
getting
hurt as well.
Run over by Mariznick.
Yeah. Jeez Louise.
So I think it might be a little slow. And I also, you know, just the fact that it's been a little slower the last few years because more teams are not willing to trade anybody worth a damn for a rental.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at longer contract, you know, like to get anybody good, you're going to have to trade someone that has more than, that is not an impending free agent for the most part. So it might be a little slow.
I do think there are
maybe interesting.
Could be some interesting names out there. Yeah. I mean, certainly, you know, pitching is always in demand, and anybody who's a decent relief pitcher on any of those bad teams that we mentioned, like probably will be on the move. You know, like
Will Smith for sure.
Yeah, Shane Green.
Yeah.
I think you know there are a few bigger names on those teams. Yeah. The Matthew Boyd, the Mariners have a few pitchers.
I think Ian Kennedy has been having such a good year. Like, I feel like that he'll.
I'm sure somebody
be
will
be a target. I don't think the Royals
take
are gonna
him,
get, like,
but I don't
a
think they'll get a lot.
No, but I'm all for the Royals. I want this Royal sell. I keep seeing Billy Hamilton on these trade lists, and I'm like, who? Like, maybe he'll get traded for nothing, but, like, who is...
Well, the interesting thing is, like, the elimination of the August trade deadline is, like, most affects, I think, a deal for somebody like Hamilton, where it's like, you could acquire him on the 31st and carry him on your roster for one game, and then he can be a pinch runner in the postseason.
That's true.
And you can carry him after rosters expand, and it's no big deal. But, I wouldn't imagine anybody's going to...
I keep seeing it constantly,
back up
and I'm
the
like,
truck.
Why? I feel like Soler is the better move.
It's just all relative because everybody on the Royals pretty much is not good, I would say.
Soler, I think, has hit himself into a possible
maybe.
Trade. But I mean, like Dozier and Mondesi aren't like the only players that are in Merrifield. I don't think they're going to trade Merrifield, even though he's constantly in rumors.
Well, I'll say so. We want to put some players on some teams, right?
We want to pick our guys
who we think we know where they should go, and I do think Whit Merrifield should go to the Cubs.
Oh, now that is interesting.
I think second base is really, as we were talking about right before we were recording, is the Cubs' biggest hole. And I think Merrifield really is kind of Ben Zobrist light in a way, that having him to play second this year and then to stick wherever next year would be huge for the Cubs.
Oh, man, I wasn't even thinking about that, but you are correct. Also,
I don't know if
he would definitely hit leadoff.
Probably.
Which would be, because Schwarber's hitting leadoff now and not doing such a shabby job, but Merrifield's fast and just gets on base all the time.
Yeah.
I don't. He doesn't walk a lot, so maybe he wouldn't hit, but he'd also be valuable in that, because Madden does the, you know, hit the bad pitcher eighth, ninth spot, like, which is usually a nothing spot, but if you're essentially turning over the lineup with Witt down there.
Yeah.
That's not a bad... I wonder what they'd have to give up.
Yeah, I don't know what the Cubs farm system looks like these days. I think it's pretty bad, right? So who knows if they even have the pieces, but... They'd probably have to, like, go with, like, Ian Happ and... That seems like maybe the kind of move the Royals would be into, because they're the guys who traded for Soler and traded... Yeah. They like these sort of, like, young major leaguers types. The package that they got for... who did they trade to the Brewers? Moose? Was it Moose? And they got
Moose is a
Brett
free agent.
Phillips.
Kane was the trade, wasn't it?
No, Kane was a free agent. I think it was two years ago.
Sorry, they signed him, yeah.
But they got Brett Phillips from the Brewers, who sort of fit that profile. Yeah. So,
Ian Happ's just wasting away in the minors.
Yeah, exactly. Like, maybe it's, you can do Happ.
Probably some
Bodie or Caratini, like another... Another guy who's at the majors.
I don't think Bodie and Carantini are going anywhere.
Yeah, but to get a guy like Merrifield, you got to give something up, right?
That's true.
And like, if you're giving up your backup catcher, like, I don't think that is the end of the world.
Nah, I think Carantini. Yeah, I think you can. But they have Perez. It doesn't matter. But yeah, that's not a bad. I think Merrifield at the Cubs would be good. They definitely need a second baseman, but they also need bullpen.
Yeah,
I mean, they just got Kimbrel, who's not pitching that great.
I think
healthy,
when you got Kimbrel now, you got to keep your bet on Kimbrel that he's going to pitch better, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sure they will get an arm, but like, I don't think they'll get anybody high profile because Kimbrel is their high profile guy.
Oh yeah, they're not going to go after like Will Smith or anything like that. No, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll get Kennedy.
Could be.
That would be
good.
Yeah,
package him together.
Yeah.
Do you have any dream deals? Ooh, that's what we should have called this from the beginning. Dream deals, like Dream Day.
Like Dream Date? Is that what I would like to see Bumgarner leave the Giants. Mostly because, first of all, I love the teams he picked for his no trade. Like, I love everything about this story.
He did it. He picked the ones that he's most likely to be traded to, right?
Yeah,
leverage the deal, basically.
Yeah. So, I mean, he might change his mind, but, like, I mean, what's that? It ended up leaving, like, the Twins, right? Like, I would love...
Bumgarner on the Twins would actually be pretty interesting.
Wouldn't that be...
Bumgarner, Berríos, and Odorizzi as your playoff rotation?
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
Those are the type of trades I like to think have happened. I don't know anything about the Twins farm system, so I don't know if they would get anything, but...
They still have a pretty decent farm system, I think. I think they have a fair number of arms down there still, which I think the Giants would probably be interested in.
But I think that if they could... I think any team that gets him, and if he sticks with his guns about not wanting to go to like an already contender and wants to help like a team get over the hump.
Is that what it was though? Mm-hmm. I thought it was just that he like wanted to approve a trade if he's going to like be like going to the Yankees or something like that. He wanted like to be in control of that sort of.
Well, I think also I don't think he necessarily like wanted to get traded. So he picked the contender. So that way, the likelihood of him get traded went down
because
all the teams that would be able to get him won't be able to get him.
Right.
But if the Giants still pull the trigger, I think it'd be interesting if he went to a team like the Twins or like, it seems like this is a move the Rangers always make, but like the Rangers. like getting.
I do think the Rangers should push in because I don't see them like being this close. You know, they lucked into some really good seasons from Hunter Pence and Shin-Soo Choo and Mike Minor. Like, I don't know that they can count on this same thing happening again next year. So, like, I think they should probably push in.
Yeah.
Is Bumgarner from Texas?
I think every pitcher is from Texas. I think he is, based on when we had someone pretend to be Bumgarner. I think I remember.
Well, okay, so I like Bumgarner to the Twins. I like him to the Rangers slightly less, but I do think just because it's the Rangers are less interesting to me than the Twins. But
definitely, I think if the Twins make one big splash move like that, that's going to be good. But they don't want to mortgage their future. That would be insane.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a dicey teams like them.
I think you can get because I think expectations have been recalibrated from selling teams, right? That like, like for Bumgarner, you know, maybe you're looking at a top 100 guy, but you're not looking at a top 30 guy, a top 20 guy, you know?
Right. It's not like the days of when Randy Johnson pitches for the Astros or Sabathia went to the Brewer.
Like, exactly. Like they're just not, nobody's giving up these hauls anymore.
Yeah.
And so I don't think the selling teams are expecting the same hauls anymore.
That's true. That's a good point.
Except for guys, especially for guys with only a half season of control, you know, maybe if it was, if he had a couple years.
Right. Well, like Jimenez for Quintana is a good example.
Right.
Of that,
exactly.
Where, like that's I don't think either side regrets or thinks that that was a bad trade.
Oh, but the Cubs might. Not because Quintana is going to be bad, but because
Eloy
looks fucking awesome.
He does look really
The
good.
Last like month he's been crushing.
Where is he playing? Is he left or right?
He's in right. He's terrible in the outfield. I will say that.
I guess that's the one.
Oh, no, he's in left. Sorry, he's in left. Yeah.
Schwarber. Yeah, they're still going to regret it. I'm not going to pretend it's not. But what I'm saying is that I think that was a fair price to pay
for
what the potential of Quintana was. But then you are looking at a situation where it's 2.5 years of control or whatever.
Yeah,
whatever
I think for Quintana it was like 4 years.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
Yeah. Any other?
Yeah, I think my other big one for a team that needs to push in on a big deal is I think the Brewers. I think for them, it makes sense to me to go after Syndergaard, who the price might be depressed a little bit because he's not having a great year, but obviously we all know what he's capable of, and the Brewers continue to lack even the resemblance of a frontline starter. like on their staff, like they just seem to refuse to like want to try to get one. And I think like at some point they're just going to have to buckle and be like, yeah, we're relatively certain that in the playoffs, this guy's going to give us like six innings, seven, you know, of like one or two run
ball.
You
think so? I mean, does Marcus Stroman fit this bill for you too? Or is it like, are you thinking like big, like they have to go big, like Syndergaard big?
I mean, Marcus Stroman is, I think, on a lower plane. He's a lower tier of like talent, right? Like
I'm not saying he's as talented, but I mean,
he's having a better year than Syndergaard.
Yeah.
But he's also had worse years, you know. And I think like I think he'd be a great get for sure. But like if I was the Brewers, like I don't think that the price for those two guys is going to be hugely different.
So you might
higher price. Yeah, I think they have the same number of years of control. Maybe Syndergaard has one additional season.
Okay.
But I'm looking up right now.
Yeah.
So Syndergaard has one additional season. So you would expect the price to be higher. But you know, the peripherals for Syndergaard are not what they were, but they're still good. Like he still should be pitching better. But I do think to your point, yeah, sure. Stroman would be another guy that if I was the Brewers, I would be looking to, or the Twins, really. He just isn't really a big strikeout guy. And, you know, when, not that that is necessarily death, but when you're in the playoffs and, like, some of these teams top to bottom, right, just have power hitters throughout the lineup.
You want to get those outs.
Right, yeah. You want a guy who you think can strike out Cody Bellinger, not the guy who's going to leave one in the zone that Cody Bellinger can hit a million miles because he's hitting everything a million miles, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think that would be a great move. I think that would be I mean, I don't want the Brewers to improve in any way, but I think if looking at baseball objectively, yeah, I just like I really don't know what the Mets are going to do.
I think they got to listen.
We're
going to
talk about it later a little bit. Oh, yeah. I think they'll listen, but just because we don't know anything about what's his name? I never remember how to say his name.
Brody Van Wagenen. Van Wagenen. Or whatever.
Like, yeah, we don't know like what his whole strategy or deal is going to be.
That's
we
true.
Don't know what kind of pressure they're getting from the top. Like it's just, and they're in such chaos. Again, we're going to talk about that later, but I think they'll listen. And I think if the Brewers can give them, or the Twins or anybody can give them an attractive package. I mean, I don't think that they'll trade within the division. What do the Braves need? Bullpen help?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think that's what my Braves fan friends have been after. Yeah. I did have one friend who texted me about what I thought the price would for Alex Colomé would be for the White Sox.
Yeah.
So I think that is something they're looking for. I'm interested in what do you think kind of the favorites? Do you think the favorites need to make any moves? Like, and by favorites, I sort of mean like Dodgers, Astros, Yankees.
I don't. That's a good question. Like it. I mean, I don't think the Yankees. I mean, the Yankees could, I guess, use some starting pitching depth or help. Like they kind of what you were saying with the Brewers. They if they could just have a guy, since they haven't had any starting pitchers that jump out at you.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it would make sense for the Yankees to try to go after Stroman or Bumgarner if he loses that, or Greinke because they can afford it or whatever. I don't think
Greinke would be a good fit.
I don't know if Greinke would even go to the Yankees, but so that might be the deal from the Yankees. But I don't know what else they need. They're playing this well, and they've had a million guys on in the you know what I mean. They have mm-hmm. as many DL days as home runs, and so it's. And I don't think the Astros are. I mean, I'm sure they'll make a move, but what do they need? I mean, maybe some bullpen. I mean, it's. I think everybody would like a bullpen arm.
Yeah,
right?
I think the Astros could also use a starter, especially facing the possibility of losing Gerrit Cole. I think odds are that they're probably the favorite to re-sign Gerrit Cole, but if they could get a guy, especially
under.
A guy like Syndergaard, like they have the most advanced pitching development system in the majors, like pretty apparently, and I haven't read MVP Machine yet, but I've heard that a lot of it is about the Astros pitching development and how they're able to add spin rate to these guys. So you look at what they did with Cole and you think like, well, does it make more sense to re-sign Gerrit Cole to like $160 million? Or does it make more sense to trade Kyle Tucker or like even Jordan Alvarez, right? Who's been so good, like trade him for a guy like Syndergaard or like whoever who are available are going
to
be.
If they feel like they can develop that way, is it worth it to try to grab like Danny Duffy or someone who's kind of struggling but has team control, relatively young, and then make them like a fourth or third starter if they believe that they...
Maybe.
I mean, I don't know. I'm punching outside my weight a little bit about like I don't know exactly what Danny Duffy's troubles are if they're in the wheelhouse of what the Astros are looking for.
Yeah.
I don't know that off the top of my head, but those are the kind of moves that seem to make more sense and have been successful for them. I mean, also they went and just got Verlander. So
yeah,
you know, like
and they got
they
Cole.
Make, like they got Cole. Yeah. They make big moves.
They'll take the big swings for sure.
I wonder if, I mean, like Chris Archer has been terrible, but maybe if they know what's going on with Chris Archer, that could be like a low key if all of a sudden, I know that's back to the Pirates.
That would be so frustrating.
Wouldn't it though? But like it's like the Cardinals, you know what I mean? It's like if their thing is to find someone that can't play well for anybody else.
Yeah.
Sounds like the Phillies, because if Arrieta's on the shelf, they'll probably be looking for starting pitching.
Yeah, I mean there's always gonna be
a
market for pitching no matter what.
And the Dodgers, I mean, what like I think they're set.
Yeah, they look good. I mean, I do think like again, a bullpen arm is the only thing I could really see. Like, if they, and they might be sort of in the market for a high end arm, right? Because, like, they've had to lean on Kenley Jansen really hard in the last couple postseasons, and it hasn't worked out all that well. And this team is, like, so deep and so set to see.
Yeah.
Like, it would be a real shame if, like, the bullpen again became their sort of Achilles heel, despite the amount of depth they have in the rotation, the amount of depth they have in the lineup. So I could see them like going after I don't know, whoever the big, like if the Reds turn into sellers like Raisel Iglesias,
right.
Or
yeah.
I don't think the Mets probably would trade Edwin Diaz, but you know, like if I was the Dodgers GM, that would be the echelon of guys I was looking at, I think.
Yeah, I think that's because if you don't get him, then it's like whatever. Mm-hmm. Like you still have the best, probably the most stacked team.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how much they'll. That's a really interesting question. I'm more interested in seeing what the Reds do, especially
Ken Giles, maybe.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what the Padres do. I'm interested to see what the White Sox do.
Yeah,
because these are
these
Padres
young
and
teams
White Sox,
that are like right in the sort of 500 range. That like I think
are
any
like,
of those teams, if they could get a guy with a couple of years control, could make a move.
Yeah, yeah, but they're. I think it's safe to say the Padres and White Sox are both at least 1 year ahead of schedule. Like they were. I mean, it's not like I don't think either team's going to make the playoffs, but I don't think anybody expected them to do much better than
right
80 wins, and they're on pace to be above, or I mean 75 wins probably,
right.
And they're on pace to do above
the White
that.
Sox are. It's tough for me to answer this kind of thing because it feels like this rebuild has lasted for my entire fucking life.
Like what is
so
ahead
like
of schedule?
Yeah, right. It's like relative to. What we thought they would be on opening day, they're ahead of schedule.
That's what
relative
I meant, yeah.
to what we thought they would be when they traded Chris Sale, like
well,
3 years
yes,
ago. Like
they're still
maybe
behind.
On yeah. schedule if you're generous, maybe a little bit.
I'm
behind.
Talking, yeah, I'm talking
right.
opening day where
right.
you were looking and saying if the White Sox are going to be good, you're probably looking at 2020, 2021.
Right.
With the Padres, you're probably looking at the same thing, and
yeah.
they're and by good I mean in the playoff hunt.
Right.
Because they're both, I think, within 5 games of the playoff. Maybe the White Sox are down to like 7 at the
yeah,
most.
Yeah, they're like
but,
6 or 7 back.
But still, you would have thought that they were there with the Mariners.
No,
trust me, I'm
not looking
to
give
Torres
in the mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see what they do, just because it's like, especially the White Sox, I guess, but and the Padres. Their front offices have been traditionally so nuts. It'll be interesting what the Diamondbacks and Rockies do.
Yeah.
All these teams that are hanging in there.
Yeah.
The Rays will do something that we can't even begin to expect.
Yeah, that's probably
so,
true. That will be very interesting
yeah,
for sure.
They're the ones that are there to find someone. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, like what if they end up with Bumgarner? That would be such a big, weird swing for them, but it would be good. I don't.
No long term.
I feel like Bumgarner
guess.
Would relish being on the Rays and getting to be the ones that try to take
down
the Yankees.
I would be way into that.
The Yankees
that.
And Red
That'd
Sox.
Be very cool.
Red Sox will probably try to get like Justin Smoke or something like that, right?
What, just like a decent bat?
Yeah.
I don't think
that they have good first base play right now.
Yeah. I mean, Moreland, they have, I think, on another year on his contract, and
yeah.
he's been good in the past, so who knows? But he also has mostly been a platoon guy through his career,
yeah.
so I don't know. The Red Sox are entirely not interesting to me right
me
now,
too. Yeah.
which is strange because they were so good last year. And now I'm just like, oh, they're the same team, but like, 20% worse.
Yeah.
Like that is AKA just a more boring version of the team I already watched, you know?
yeah. And the Nationals, I guess, probably had to be buyers now.
Yeah. You would think at least not sellers. You
yeah.
know, you would have thought a month ago that Rendon would be like the biggest name on the move. Maybe
yeah, Scherzer was in talks, even though I don't think that ever would have happened, but not
Ooh.
Now.
Yeah, no, man, certainly. I would love it if Max Scherzer was on my team. Max Scherzer is like one of the most fun guys in baseball.
How fun would that be?
So fun.
Way more fun than Yu Darvish, I'll tell you that much.
I believe, well, history has told us that is the case. Yeah, the last 2 years. Well, we should get into our conversation with Max,
yeah,
I think.
Let's do it.
I'm looking forward to the trade deadline. I think it'll be exciting, and we'll be here to talk to you guys more about that when stuff goes down. But in the meantime, we'll take a very quick break and we'll be right back with Max Branch. All right, welcome back to Duck Snort and coming to us live from an airport, I think. From LAX airport. Wait, from what airport? Before I introduce you, what airport are you at?
I'm in San Diego today. It's a week removed from my first Padres game at Petco, and sadly heading back to the East Coast.
All right. So coming to us live from San Diego Airport is Off the Bench Baseball co-founder Max Frankel. You can read him on Off the Bench. You can follow him at OTBB_Max on Twitter. Max, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
How was the Padres game?
It was a lot of fun. I got to say, I got to put Petco near the top of any of my favorite ballpark lists.
That's what
I very cool. Like
I've
a little town or something they got there.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. I haven't been down there. We talked about taking a road trip down there, so we need to put it on the list. It's like, especially now that the Padres are actually exciting.
Highly recommended, though they certainly got beat the game I saw them against the Giants. But really cool stadium, lots of good beer, lots of good food.
Did you
and
see
San
the
Diego,
game
so
where
the weather's always perfect.
Were you at the game where Tatis made that insane grab and throw from his knees?
Yes. It was just as jaw-dropping in person. It was incredible. And then he hit the ball like 450 feet into the second deck in left field later in the game.
God, it's going to be torturous for White Sox fans to watch this guy be like an MVP-level player for the next 10 years.
White Sox have a decent team, actually, this year. I was going to mention later, they look pretty good between Moncada, who's been better, Jimenez. I don't know. I'd be pretty excited if I was a White Sox fan, too.
I am excited, and I think overall we're excited, but it would look a lot better if Fernando Tatis was also on the team instead of 2 years of garbage James Shields. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the second half of the season, and we're going to pick our biggest winners and biggest losers individually for each of us of the first half. So this is going to be some hot take theater. So Max, if you're ready, I think, why don't you go first with your biggest winner of the first half?
Yeah, happy to. So I gave a lot of thought on this, and before I reveal my choice, I want to give an honorable mention shout out to the Twins and to Rocco Baldelli, who've been unreal this year. And Baldelli, I think, has got to be like one of the hot new managers in baseball. And I don't think he'll win manager of the year, but he certainly deserves consideration.
Who do you think?
I'm going to pick Cody Bellinger.
Oh, Cody Bellinger.
I'm going to pick Cody Bellinger. Obviously, Cody Bellinger has been one of the best players in baseball for the last couple of years. This is his third full season in the majors. But I think after his amazing Rookie of the Year campaign, his first season – last year, despite the fact that he put up a 4.4 WAR, was kind of seen as a disappointment. 25 homers in a full season out of a guy who was supposed to be a big slugger, 260-ish batting average, 260 batting average. He was like sort of on the track to be Joey Gallo 2.0, maybe a little bit disappointing. Now, Mike Trout's the best player in baseball, but you definitely cannot go any past Trout without at least mentioning Cody Bellinger. He's hitting .336. He's got 30 bombs in just 88 games. He's already set a career high with a 6.6 BWAR. He might win the batting title. He might win the home run crown. He is just absolutely exploded this season. And there's a lot of winners. Yelich has been amazing, as I mentioned, the Twins. But man, if Cody Bellinger sort of cemented his position as just one of the top guys in the whole league.
I think that's good. I think it's a fair...
Winner, he's been ridiculous. Like, it's insane. Also, the fact that, you know, when he came up, he was sort of more of a first baseman than an outfielder, I think. Or maybe that's just where the Dodgers were playing him because that's where they needed him. But it certainly felt like that was where his future was. And he's sort of turned himself into this, like, very, very good outfielder who can fake his way at center for several games a year. Like, it's been a really impressive season from Bellinger, so I think that's a great choice. Max, what do you think his second half looks like compared to his first?
I mean, I think he's got to cool off a little bit, right? Like, you can't stay this hot for a whole season, but I think we're looking at like at least a .310 average, probably with like 45 or 50 homers. I mean, he's already got 30. He's like cruising. If it wasn't for Yelich, he'd be the obvious MVP. But the two of them are putting up just unbelievable seasons. If he is even like 80% of what he was in the first half and the second half, then the MVP's got to be him.
Who do you think has a better second half, Bellinger or the Twins?
Ooh, well, the Twins have the easiest record in baseball. I'm sorry, the easiest schedule in baseball by winning percentage in the second half. But the Indians have been hot. I'm going to say Bellinger has the better second half.
I think I agree with that. I think the Twins cooling off, even with the easy schedule, is more likely than Bellinger.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting.
But I'll be rooting for him.
They're sort of like the team version of Bellinger, almost, where like just all these dudes started crushing and like all these dudes played up to their 99th percentile, right? And like they're individually, their 99th percentile of like Jorge Polanco is not as good as the 99th percentile of Cody Bellinger. But as a team, when a bunch of guys do it, suddenly, oh, they have the best record in the league for most of the first half, you know? So interesting comparison. Waylon, why don't we move on to you? What's your
my winner?
What's your big winner?
Well, because Max said it, I'm going to do an honorable mention that I just thought of. And the honorable mention is going to be Mike Trout, because he's still the best player in baseball. I think he passed Yelich. I can't remember. There's some numbers. He's passing Bellinger and Yelich. And maybe, I don't know.
And like wins above replacement?
I don't know if it's WAR, if it could be WOBA.
He's on He's on pace for another 10-win season, which is crazy. Like it would be like 6 in 9 years or something outrageous like that.
So he's my winner because he's somehow kind of flying under the radar because Bellinger and Yelich are putting up such huge numbers. I feel like Trout's not the talk of the town as much. But my winner is the Atlanta Braves for the year, because that division looked like a four-team race, and it's not like the Nationals are actually very hot right now. The Nationals and Phillies aren't out of it, but the Braves, I feel like everyone would agree, are the best team in that division, right? Is that controversial?
What do you think, Max?
Well, Keuchel's definitely helped. He pitched really well in his last start before the break. Yeah, I think it's the Braves' division to lose at this point. The Mets are in free fall. I think the Phillies are really good, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Phillies came and caught Atlanta in the second half. The Nats, as you mentioned, have been hot. I think it's a three-team race, but I think Atlanta's got to be the favorite at this point.
And it seems like they've been very fun. I've had Braves fans talk about how this is the most fun they've had watching the Braves in a while. And I feel like we probably, going into the season, would have expected them, if they're in first place, to be in first place by a game or in a three-team race, and which it still probably is, but I think they've outperformed our expectations, and I'd say they're the big winners of the season and have the potential to have the two seed maybe going in.
That's interesting, because I feel like, as opposed to the Twins or Bellinger, who we talked about, who sort of like jumped out to great starts and have been great the entire time, you know, certainly a month ago you wouldn't say that about the Braves, because they started slow and they were behind the Phillies for a long time. And I agree kind of with Max that I think, you know, the Phillies are at least equal to the Braves in terms of like talent on their roster. I think the Phillies have been underperforming lately. Obviously they've been really slumping. But I think, yeah, any team that goes into the All-Star break with a 6-game division lead, especially in a division that you figured would be close to closer to like a game or two than 6 or 7, would be, they would have to be considered, you know, winners. They're like so far ahead of the game, mm-hmm. as far as getting into the playoffs, which is like the biggest hurdle towards being a real contender. Yeah, you know. Yeah. So I like that pick. I'll say my pick. So I was actually going to pick the Twins, because I didn't want to be a huge homer for the White Sox. But since we already talked about the Twins, I will instead be a huge homer for the White Sox and say that Lucas Giolito is the biggest winner of the first half, because he literally went from the worst pitcher in baseball by, like, I would say a considerable margin, and as far as guys who got 25 starts, to an all-star, to one of the 10 best pitchers in baseball so far this season. And that's even including a couple of like rocky outings lately, which is insane, because either of the rocky outings, both of them were against the Cubs, and either of them would be like in contention for like his 5 or 6 best starts from last season.
Yeah.
So I think like a totally unforeseen turnaround for Giolito, even bigger than somebody like Bellinger, who went from like good to great. To go from the worst to great is like totally insane, and changes his trajectory as a player and like the White Sox trajectory in terms of the rebuild. It's such a big win for them. It's hard to overstate. Max, what do you think? Have you watched Giolito at all?
Yeah, Off the Bench is a big Giolito fan as a group. One of the guys, Sean, who's the other co-founder, and I played college baseball at Vassar College in New York, and one of the guys we played with went to high school with Giolito out here in California. So we've been following Giolito, and Max Fried of the Braves was also on that team. So we've been following them since they were in the minors, and it was annoying to see Giolito struggle so much last year with an ERA over 6. This year, obviously, he's figured it out. And like I said earlier, that whole White Sox team, they have a few injured guys. They have Giolito and some others in the rotation. They could make some noise next year, the year after. Who knows?
I mean, the division's so weak, I feel like next year isn't that unrealistic.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, assuming that the Twins just don't hit 300 homers every season from here on out. But I do think they're, even though the White Sox look much better this season, sort of their long-term trajectory has almost remained neutral because it seems like, oh, they would be peaking just as Cleveland's sort of core was like aging out, and they obviously weren't adding to it and stuff. But the Twins overperforming so much now makes them sort of like on an equal path as they were, you know what I mean? As when
I'm definitely here for the Twins, Indians, White Sox three team race next summer.
Hell yeah. Count absolutely. It's like throwback to 2004, 2005, something like that. I hope so. Let's move to our Biggest Loser, sponsored, of course, by the NBC program, The Biggest Loser.
It's still definitely on show.
Yeah.
Biggest Loser.
Yeah, definitely still exists, I think. Are the Biggest Loser of the first half in your eyes, Max?
Well, I can't say that I'm going out on a huge limb here, but I'm going to say every sports fan in Queens, New York is the Biggest Loser of the first half. The Yankees have hit a home run in each of their last 1,000 games. The Knicks don't have Zion Williamson or Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving or anybody else. The Brody Van Wagenen GM head scratching decision is a catastrophe. Mickey Callaway, who I have to say a big fan of, has completely convinced me that he needs to be fired immediately. That didn't work out very well. And Robinson Cano, who Mets fans watched dominate in the Bronx for the first half of his career, has come back triumphantly to hit fewer homers than Mets pitchers. It's really not gone well. And it doesn't really seem like there's infrastructure in place to turn it around. So it's not really clear how things are getting better. And I would say, I obviously have, growing up there, many friends who are Vets fans, Knicks fans, Yankee haters, and they are really in for a rough go of it. And I do feel bad for them. They are, in my opinion, the losers of the first half.
Yeah,
that's
we
tough
have
to argue against, isn't it?
Yeah, we have a long history of on this show of sort of laughing at the Mets being the Mets, but it does feel bleak. I guess like my counter argument to it, them being the biggest losers of the first half, is just that Pete Alonso has been like fucking amazing, like way better than I think you could have even reasonably expected for a guy of his like prospect stature. I think also that you know, the pitching hasn't been great, but it's not like DeGrom or Syndergaard's like elbows have fallen off or something like that. So I think, you know, there's still young talent on the team if they can stop being the Mets. But the unfortunate part is they're like won't stop being the
Mets.
That's
a big fat if.
Yeah, but I do think that's a good choice, Max.
I think Alonso is definitely a bright spot. And I also think it's helped that Matt Harvey didn't go to the Angels and dominate for 3 months. That would have put them over the edge. But I think the more depressing thing than a pitcher's elbow falling off is just like Syndergaard not pitching well for like no reason. And it doesn't make you feel like you can be confident in how they handle a guy like Alonso. If there was like some reason that Syndergaard was bad, I'm like, okay, that's like a thing that happens. But instead, he just caught Mets, and that's his injury. And he's been really mediocre this year, despite all that talent, just because that's how things go in Queens.
Yeah, I think one more Mets being sad fact I'll add to your list is that the main piece that they traded for Cano and Diaz, Jared Kelenic, has emerged as like probably a top 30 prospect in baseball from like not being on the prospect list really before the year. So I do think that's a strong entry. So well chosen, Max. Waylon, what's your biggest loser?
I'm going to have to say the Yankees because they had all these injuries. Stanton's barely been playing. They weren't in first place for a long time during the season. This is a joke. Obviously, it's not the Yankees. It's crazy that they're still as good as they are. I think even though Keuchel's been pitching well, I'm still going to say Keuchel and Kimbrel have been the losers of the first half because I think it's until our next collective bargaining agreement, this is a sign of things to come. I don't think it's going to get better before it gets worse. And I think so they're the symbolic, maybe not themselves losers because they got some money. I mean, I guess they did lose a lot of money, Keuchel especially.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
You know,
relative
half a season.
To what we thought in the offseason that they were going to get. And
Well, Keuchel got less than his qualifying offer. Right. Yeah.
And we've seen sort of time and again these guys who don't sign during the offseason, like start slow and don't have great years often.
Right.
Kimbrel
hasn't looked super hot.
Yeah, Kimbrel hasn't looked good.
So I think that not only are they losers because they lost out on money, they lost out on playing time, but also I think that they've set an example where teams are going to keep getting away with this, at least for the near future, in this situation with players like Kimbrel and Keuchel, which is going to be a loss for the league. So I think what they symbolize and what actually happened to them makes them the losers of the first half.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. And they are sort of losers in the way of, like, just the loss happened to them, you know, through like no faults of their own. Like this was like sort of existential forces like forcing them. So they didn't do anything to deserve this. Max, I feel like there were a few articles on Off the Bench about Keuchel and Kimbrel when they were still free agents. What do you think of them, like, just in terms of the result of their offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great pick for biggest loser. At Off the Bench, we write a lot about sort of the economics of the sport, and right now they're broken. Tonight is the Home Run Derby when we're recording this, and there's $1 million prize. And for five of the eight participants in the Home Run Derby, that $1 million will be more than they make this year, despite the fact they play for billionaire owners and salaries are, payrolls are north of $200 million. We're currently looking at a sport that sort of is built on the labor of guys who are playing in their first 6 years for relative peanuts. And then the whole reason the system works is because later, after you've proven yourself, you get the payday later. But that never really made sense because you were sort of always paying for past performance rather than future performance. And finally, smart teams figured that out. In that context, would you really want Craig Kimbrel or Dallas Keuchel to be one of your highest paid players in their early 30s with their peak behind him? No, probably not. But that's how the sport is built to work. We give guys the big payday when they finally reach free agency in their late 20s, early 30s. And if that's not going to work, we really need to go back to the drawing board and rethink this whole thing, all the way from amateur scouting and signing to the draft to how we do service time, and all the service time manipulation stuff plays into that. I think we're really cruising for a really rough labor negotiation, CBA. I think we really need to rethink the way that we dole out contracts in this sport, or else we're going to start seeing guys like Dallas Keuchel, who've done nothing but pitch well and win Cy Young Awards, continue to not even get a job when they're 31 years old, probably at the tail end of their physical prime. And that's really sad. That sucks for Keuchel, and he didn't deserve it. But it's the sort of system we're starting to be faced with at this point.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about, you know, the upcoming CBA negotiations, I think, have the potential to get, like, very, very nasty and very, very prolonged. I guess if there's a silver lining, it's that it seems like they've started having at least very basic talks between the players' union and the owners, like pretty early on. So they do have sort of a long runway to it. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, there needs to be a fundamental shift in the way that players are paid and when they're paid. And it's such a stark contrast when you look at NBA free agency just ended, and it was you know, one of the most exciting parts of the NBA season, honestly, just in terms of pure like fan engagement. And then on top of that, the economics of it, you know, they're problematic in their own way with the sort of hard salary cap and all that. But even, I would say even sort of the Keuchel and Kimbrel level players, like not superstars, but stars who are maybe nearing the end of their stardom, get paid, and they get paid for on sort of a long-term contract, and NBA teams don't blink, you know? So I do wonder if, what that's going to look like. And we've certainly talked about it a lot on this show too. And when you wrap in the way that minor leaguers are sort of abused in an economic way. It's going to be brutal.
At least Tony Clark isn't still there for the union. I think that's going to be helpful, hopefully.
Yeah, you can only hope. I mean, you would think they would want like a lawyer,
I think it is
a hard ass
lawyer,
not
though.
Just like a player who, a former player, but yeah.
Wait, switch hitting first baseman doesn't qualify you to lead labor negotiations for the largest union, most powerful union in the world?
Yes, shockingly so. I'll say, just talking about the NBA again for a second, Chris Paul was the leader of the NBA Players Union the last time that they were negotiating a collective bargaining agreement, and he specifically like inserted four max contracts. Like there was a max contract. There was a cap on the age that players could get at max contracts to sort of protect owners from themselves. And he raised it by a year. And then that was the year that he negotiated his final contract. I was like, that's fucking brilliant. Cold blooded. Like, yeah, but elect me. I'm going to get watch out for you guys.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say my pick for biggest loser of the first half, even though we're talking about how sort of the economics of the game are troubling and could perhaps hurt fans down the road in terms of canceled games and all that sort of thing. But I think my loser is all the fans who kind of bitch about the way that baseball is played on the field currently, and sort of like the baseball is broken crowd of the shifts are ruining the game and home runs are ruining the game and strikeouts are ruining the game. And you know, we just talked about guys like Bellinger and Yelich and teams like the Twins and all kinds of things that are among the most fun things in baseball this season and among the most fun things that, like, I can remember watching in recent years. There's so many fun players, fun young players, and so many more compelling personalities than there used to be, and so many new ways of being good at baseball. Even if you look at somebody like Williams Astudillo, you know, he's like one of the most fun players in the league, even though like he probably wouldn't have made the majors in the 90s because of the way he is physically, you know. So I think like it's been a super fun season in terms of the play on the field for the most part. And I think that you know, people who would focus on the number of balls hit into shifts that might have been singles going the other way or what, it's like that truly is being a loser when it comes to like enjoying the game of baseball, you know. I don't know, Max, do you know anybody like I'm talking about?
I mean, baseball's been dying for 30 years, right?
I think it's been dying for 90 years.
Yeah, Abner Doubleday said that first.
The day we started playing it. So no, baseball's not dying. Baseball's healthy. It's a pendulum. It goes all the way to home runs, and then it comes all the way back to strikeouts. And just a couple of years ago, we were talking about how nobody was hitting anymore, and now it's the opposite. I'm not worried about it. There are certain things I like, certain things I don't like, but baseball's not dying. I'll die before it does.
I also don't think baseball's dying, and I think that all these people who complain about the way baseball's played, if baseball reverted back to like the way it was in the late 70s, early 80s, people would lose their minds. They'd hate it.
It would be like everything that people who are not baseball fans criticize baseball for, but in reality of just being boring and slow and like everybody who like whines about the lack of like fundamental baseball or something, like fundamental baseball is way more boring than a three-run home run. That's just
and
how
no one's complaining about like fundamental basketball disappearing because basketball now is the most fun it's ever been,
right?
I'm not worried about that. I think it is It's such a weird part of baseball to be so stuck in the past.
Yeah, and I think, like, Max, you're absolutely right. Like, it's always been that way, and it always will be that way of people, you know, decrying the death of baseball. Actually, I look forward to the day when we are all those people, because then we don't have to be annoyed by those people, right? Like, Max, let me know when you write a post for Off the Bench about how baseball is horrible and dying, and then I'll know it's time to get on board with that point of view.
Sounds good. It'll be my very last one.
On your deathbed.
All right. Well, we are out of time, but we do want to thank Max for joining us. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at Max underscore, or wait, at OTBB underscore Max. You can read his writing on offthebenchbaseball.com. Max, get home safe, sir.
Thank you. I will do my best.
And that is it for Duckstorm for this week. So, you know, do what you do. Hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. Leave reviews. Follow us on Twitter. Waylon just gave me the worst, like, I was his...
You just keep making do it. You just keep trying to make do what you do happen. I don't think it's gonna work.
I only said it like six or seven times before we started recording. Thank you to Moonbounce for the transition music, to producer Joe for the intro music. Thank you to the entire Off the Bench team and the entire Boardwalk Audio team for their help. And we will see you guys next week.
A Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.